Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Coverage varies by plan, view contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If your car is out of warranty, one major repair bill could wipe you out. Just ask Ludacris.
Car breakdowns can wreck your wallet. Without endurance, a worn out timing belt could cost you $1,700. A busted transmission, that's $4,000 easy. An engine meltdown, $7,000. But if you've got endurance, you could never pay out of pocket for a car repair again. With endurance, your car's most expensive parts are covered. Plus, you pick the mechanic you trust to do the work. With endurance, your rate stays the same no matter how many claims you file.
If your car is under 20 years old, Endurance has you covered with unlimited miles. Plus, your plan includes 24/7 roadside assistance anywhere in the country.
So who's going to pay for your next breakdown? You or Endurance?
Choose the name Ludacris trusts. Endurance. Right now, get $300 off any plan, plus a year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free. All backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your free quote at endurancewarranty.com. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Bran 4.
Nope, we're doing Ravens today, Jimmy.
We're doing Ravens. I read the doc.
That's okay. I read the teleprompter.
I
should have changed the doc. I should have changed the thing. But we're doing Ravens today, man. It's okay. Jimmy literally might have just got laid off work like 2 seconds ago. We don't know yet.
So it's unclear.
We don't know. We're just flying up. Hey man, we're just rolling
flying like a raven.
We're flying like a raven today. But you know what? I'd ask you how you doing, but you just got this email that says, "Hey, we're laying off 10% of your people." So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I guess we'll find out how the old six leg parlay works out for me in this. Get your promo code BTK at DraftKings.
We do have some sort of sponsor. I do not remember who it is, but it's because we didn't even get to read an ad for it. You know,
it's not Kings Road, is it?
No, it's not. It's not Kings Road, unfortunately. You know, I was really hoping at some point we would be sponsored by the Sydney Sweeney bathwater, but bath soap, whatever. But man.
I don't know if our listener base is that what they're into?
I don't know.
Shout out to Sir Matthew Perry, man. Shout out to Sir Matthew.
No, I mean, you know, I think people are sleeping on how important that thing's going to be. I know a lot of people look at it as a joke, but think about the type of people that are actually going to be using the Sydney Sweeney bath soap. Think about, I mean, seriously, for a second, think about the type of people that are going to be like using.
Yeah, I don't want to think about it.
I'm just saying, you're talking about like, I mean, you know, that's like literally like mom's basement type of guys that are going to be using it. Probably people who don't have great hygiene. It could literally do wonders for the world. It may kill big pharma. We may rid humanity of diseases because so many people are going to be using, are going to be washing their hands more often and their bodies. that normally do. I mean, it might be the cure for everything.
Listen, you're gonna smell good while you're dying of measles. Okay, you're gonna,
I guess, you know,
that corpse is gonna be smelling fresh.
Measles, I mean, but if you wash it off your hands, you know,
so true, man.
Think about how much more cleanly we will be as a society because of this.
Everyone smells like Sydney Sweeney's bathwater.
It might be the great. It might. I mean, I know people think it's a joke, but seriously, I mean, history books might be. You know, there might be sections in history books about how, as a society, we cured so many diseases because people were washing their hands more.
I think it's over, man.
I think society's over.
Yeah, I think it's over, dude. Okay. I think we all just need to unplug the routers, walk away from the keyboards.
I know it seems like doom and gloom out there. In the world, but I'm going to start today's episode off with a question for you, Jimmy.
Okay. Oh my God.
Which will we see first? Which gets released first? Winds of Winter or the Epstein Files?
I already know it.
I mean, serious. I think it's a legitimate question.
Winds. It's Winds.
You think we'll see Winds first?
Yeah, it's not even close. It's Winds. I knew you were going to do it. I knew it. I knew it. Someone said you were on there, Matt.
On the Winds of Winter? Maybe.
No.
We talked about it.
Oh. That's what Sir Ezra told me.
Well, I think I was like 4 when all that stuff was going on, so... Hopefully I'm I was like, oh, you know, that'd be a funny question. But hey, you mean, I think we will, you know. Somebody also left us a comment the other day and said, are you guys going to keep making videos about like Winds of Winter coming out, because I feel like it's never coming out? And I was like, yes, 100%.
So it's like, oh, are you guys going to finally give it up? Are you going to still be making Winds videos in like 30 years? And Matt just responded with yes.
Yes, 100%.
Why not?
Yeah.
Man? Yeah. Mostly well, an excuse for me and Matt to hang out.
That's true. That's true. And I'm excited. We're edging towards the end of Storm of Swords. We're going to do Boiled Leather. Ryan just said he just finished that. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And we have a bunch of questions. We have a bunch of comments here, YouTube comments and stuff that we're going to go through. But I do have actually a real question for you, Jimmy, because I was kind of thinking about this with like Wins and stuff like that. And then also I was on TikTok and every once in a while, like a Brandon Sanderson clip will pop. And it kind of got me thinking a little bit about this. And, you know, also like seeing some like people talk about Wheel of Time and the ending. Let's just say the unfortunate does happen and George does die before he releases Winds. I mean, you're like read a ton way more fantasy than I do. And you talk with people who are hardcore into it. And you even talk with authors, like you've talked with Erickson, you know, with the Lawson series. Right. Exactly. You've interviewed a lot of these people. Do you think, let's just say that George doesn't get Winds out. Do you think it would actually tarnish his legacy if somebody came out and finished it? Like, I know it feels kind of different because he's still alive, but like when I think of Wheel of Time, like I don't really ever see people like be like, oh man, you know, like Robert Jordan didn't finish it and Brandon Sanderson had to come in. Like, it still feels like most people view it as Robert Jordan's series, not so much like Brandon Sanderson's.
Yeah. I mean, there are people out there who feel this way. They say, you know, if Robert Jordan hadn't padded those books so much with the slog and all the deep, right, like, he could have finished it. I've seen that, which I think honestly, it's pretty mean-spirited take in many ways, right? Like, it's not like he purposely died and not finished his series, right? So the situation is different, though. Let's be clear. It's absolutely different. So when you say tarnished legacy, like, objectively, no, not at all. But from an internet perspective, oh yeah, that'll be like the main talking point, at least for a good amount of years. Matt, this killed me. It was on one of our shorts. Someone said something about how George's legacy would be ruined and how he'll be known as the author who could never finish a story. And I like had secondhand embarrassment considering the fact that George has so many other novels and stories that he has finished. I mean, he's one of the most prolific short story writers in the 70s and 80s and has an embarrassment of riches when it comes to awards and you know, just notables. He has finished so many stories. Now, he might not have finished his most popular one. That is true. But to say the man has never finished anything is just objectively wrong. And I honestly was like embarrassed for the commenter when I saw that, because I was like, oh, like, you know, they just don't know. They've never even thought to Google it or to look into it more. And you know, like you said, I am a avid reader of pretty much all things fantasy and sci-fi. So I have come to appreciate George R. R. Martin for far more than just A Song of Ice and Fire. I mean, I think some of his short works like Sand Kings, I would argue Sand Kings is as good as A Song of Ice and Fire. You and I love Duncan Egg, right? Like, we love those contained stories. They're so good. He's so talented in the short form. So I think to people who read a plethora of things and are a little bit more aware, I don't think it really messes with his legacy too much. I think for people who are just readers of A Song of Ice and Fire, that's like all they care about, or their TV show driven, whatever. Like, yeah, probably to them, that would be a huge black eye. Yeah. But, you know, Canterbury Tales are not finished. I mean, that's one of the most popular literary pieces ever. I mean, like, Canterbury Tales are huge.
And his, his other work too, like the stuff he's done with, I know people complain about wild cards and stuff like that, but I think one of the things, you know, it's like people realize, don't forget about, and maybe it's just because a lot of the people who watch TV or read fantasy aren't as big into video games, but Elden Ring is like gonna be a massive franchise. I mean, it already, just with the, now they have
that already is, yeah,
right, but I mean, like, you, like when Elden Ring 2 drops, which we know it will at some point, and like, yeah, George is a very big part of that franchise.
He's absurdly successful.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, Elden Ring very easily could become bigger, like, in, you know, in like the next 10 to 15 years, it could be like a bigger thing than Game of Thrones, right? I mean, like, that's, I people like kind of think about video games, I don't think they think about them as like being nearly as big, but do you know what the single most, it will change next year, but do you know what the single most, like, the biggest launch of any media is ever, like, in terms of like has made the most money, the biggest piece of, like, I guess you want to call it content or whatever you want to call it?
GTA 5?
No. Red Dead Redemption 2 is the most profitable, like, I mean, it blows movies out of the water. Like,
yeah,
it's not even close.
Yeah, I mean, I do think
GTA 6 will be.
Yeah, I mean, that's
GTA 6 is going to make like $10 billion in a day. I mean, it's going to be absurd.
Yeah, it's all about the scope you look at, right? So George has been successful in Broadway. He's been successful in television shows. He's worked on movies. He's worked on short stories. He's been an editor. And Brandon Sanderson's actually said that George R. R. Martin's one of the finest editors that the fantasy genre has ever seen. And now he's also dipped his toes into working with video game that ended up being a massive hit. I mean, there is so many things that you can accredit to him that I think have been very successful and very impactful to pop culture. It's just really hard for me to imagine a non-finished series being, you know, nullifying all of that. I'm not saying it can't for the individual, but it depends on the scope the person's looking at. And another thing about A Song of Ice and Fire is that, like, I'm in that corner, and no one ever agrees fully, but a large amount of people think that A Storm of Swords is the greatest fantasy book ever written, regardless of whether the series is ended or not. That means something to me. I'm also like not a big endings guy. I just never have been. I've talked about this on my YouTube channel plenty, but, you know, I am all about that journey before destination. I really am about that. I'm not saying an ending can't help or hurt a series, but I'm okay with things being unfinished. I think that's part of life, isn't it? Like there's people who all their time on this earth has been robbed way short and their story was never finished. And I mean, obviously it's a different thing when someone has taken 11 years to write a book or whatever, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, that's just how life works sometimes. Like, sometimes we don't get a fairy tale ending. Sometimes we don't get the satisfaction we want. And it happens every day. So to me, a piece of art being unfinished is just another thing, right? That might not feel as fulfilling as if it were to be finished. But yeah, I think the legacy, like, you know, when you go on the internet, especially the folks who aren't reading a lot of other stuff or haven't read any of this other stuff, I think that they will think that that is like the biggest black eye. But this is a guy who is, with all the accomplishments aside, even he has helped so many authors get to the grand stage and given them opportunities, like, massively. And some people we aren't even aware of, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So as a writer's writer, you know what I'm saying? Like, from a writer's perspective, I think George will always have a lot of goodwill among many people. There are some people who hate him, but I mean, I think he's done a lot for a lot of people. So I don't know. For me, I think he's pretty much solidified.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't think it's just like, you know, if he did die and Winsett did come out, like, and let's say they, even if they got Brandon Sanderson, right? I think more of the jokes would be like, oh, Brandon Sanderson's just the guy who, not that he would be, but I'm just saying, you know, somebody like that, for example. But I mean, it's just, I think to the casual person who's going to go pick, like, if Wheel of Time had, the show had been more successful and it had caused people to go read the books and everything, I don't think people would have been like, they would just read the books.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they just like click in the audiobooks and they just go. They don't, like, most people aren't nearly as hardcore about it, where like us, where we like dive into people's lives and, you know, like, want to know everything. It's like, my wife just read all of A Court of Thorns
of Roses. Yeah.
Whatever. Mass. Right. ACOTAR. Yeah. Literally did like, I don't know, like 30 books or something. It's ridiculous. She just literally did all of it. And now she's on the other one you just you and Kelsey recommended to her, the Fourth Wing.
Fourth Wing. Yeah.
She's like blitzing through all those books.
That's awesome. I love when people get into reading. Like a lot of people like make fun of the romantasy genre, but I don't think people realize how important it is to get people back into reading. Like it's
yeah.
We need people to read. Like I don't care what they read, just read.
Yeah, because because now she's about to be done with it, and she's like, well, you know, what should I read next? I'm like, ask Jimmy or Kelsey. I mean, ask, and she did. I think she messaged Kelsey. It's like, hey, what should I read? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. And that's another thing is that A Song of Ice Fire, whether it's finished or not, has gotten, I mean, I would imagine hundreds of thousands of people back into reading. I mean, I know it brought me back as an adult. So that counts for something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether you like them or you don't. I don't like J.K. Rowling at all. I don't even like Harry Potter. But I have to say that Harry Potter was probably a net positive as far as like getting people to read. I mean, I know for me, when I was a kid, it really got me into wanting to try a whole bunch of different books. And
yeah,
that's that we need that. We do. So
yeah. Hey, I'm with you. Okay. Let's I got a handful of Ravens here. We're just gonna kind of, and these are all just like comments on some of our more recent episodes and stuff like that. So I'm gonna pull some of these up here. So this one is actually from, sometimes I go back and I pull out, like if I find a good clip in some of our old videos. So this one is actually to that brand chapter, which was the Helen Reed story of the Chronic Men. So this person, this is Sword of the Morning, says Sword of the Morning, says the scene where Helen finds Ned still holding Lyanna's hand. The exact line is they found him still holding her hand. They obviously Helen wasn't alone then. Plus, because of the extreme importance of the baby, we have to assume Rhaegar made sure everything was prepared. We can guess that there were women there to take care of Lyanna and possibly even a maester. I do believe that there were more survivors from the fight. I don't know why they'd be fighting anyway. They know Ned's reputation. Did they think Ned was going to harm the baby or his sister? Of course not. The whole Tower of Joy scene is missing so many details. I heard a theory that Ned misheard Lyanna. You know, she was dying. She was weak, probably mumbling incoherently. What if she kept mumbling the word prophecy, not promise me? Just a thought I had. I like the Mira John theory, though. I also like that. So the idea that they might be twins, which is ultimately what I pulled out of that little big there. And says, I also wonder why Edric Dayne would be named for Ned if he was responsible for the death of, the most adored family member, the Dane's most adored family member.
Very cool. Very cool. A lot of the questions that we've been asking for many, many years, such as the Edric Dayne piece, but also dipping their toes into some of the more, I would say, tinfoily stuff like Mira and John, you know, being brother and sister. I've never been a believer of it, but I think it's a really fun thing to think about. I will say the first part of this is excellent. They found, right? There's more. And we all agree that the Tower of Joy, it stinks to high heaven. There's something else there. Ned did not beat the Sword of the Morning. I mean, I am dying for that scene from Bran's perspective in Winds or whatever book that it would come in. I mean, that's one of the number one things I'd be looking forward to with the new book coming out for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And it is, man, the whole thing. I like the part about the prophecy, not promise me. Right. Because.
Oh, yeah. Know, yeah.
Because where it's like, I mean, you know, Hodor, right? For years, we just thought we never think that was going to be hold the door and have the connection to what it was. That was like, I mean, that was to me watching Game of Thrones. That moment was probably the most like, oh my God moment for me. Like,
I think it's the best moment in television history.
Like, this is insane. Like, this is like, I mean, especially because
I paced my room for like an hour after it.
Ez and I were watching it and it was, we were legally streaming it because I found it on like some sort of streaming site and we were watching it and we actually did a reaction. It was like one of the first YouTube videos we ever did. I think it's still, we have to go dig through. It's like some old YouTube.
Oh, I'd love to watch that, dude.
And we're just like, just sitting there. We're just like, oh my God. Like, oh my, like it was insane. Like it was crazy. It was just like, I cannot believe watch. Like, talk about genius, because it's like connecting everything. And it's one of those scenes that you just, so you know, is going to happen. You know, Dan and Dave did not write. And it, because it just makes everything, because otherwise, if they didn't write it, then what is the point of Hodor? You know, and all the, it's like, it's so,
well, we know George gave them that too. That was one of the things exactly he gave them. Yeah.
Is phenomenally good. And that actually brings up a really good question. That actually, like, that's something we should dive deeper into, really. And maybe that's where this will also, this comment will ultimately lead us to. But it, like, time wise, is that happening in Winds of Winter? Or is that going to be Dream of Spring? Is that his plan? Because if that happens in Winds of Winter, then that gives us a huge indication as to where Winds is actually going to end, as opposed to Dream of Spring.
I think it happens at the end of Winds. Yeah, for me, it happens in Winds, I think.
So you think, like, Wall could come down in Winds?
Yeah, I think so. It's the penultimate.
But the Wall might be different. That might be different. But
the whole thing could be different. But yes, I believe that the end of Winds of Winter will be very much like almost like a warning shot, a cliffhanger, if you will. Very similar to season six's ending, I would say. Dany will be coming over. I think A Dream for Spring is all about Dany in Westeros. I think that that is. Sorry, I had a phone call that randomly came in.
Oh, you thought it would be about your work call.
It might be.
Okay.
I actually picked it up. I actually picked it up.
Do you need to pause? We can pause. I can edit out.
If they call again, I'll answer it.
Okay.
Bro. I get fired while we're recording, wouldn't that be crazy? Wouldn't that be insane?
That would suck.
Oh my. All right. So anyways, okay, they're calling again.
All right, we'll pause. Yeah, take your time.
My golf clubs are ready to be picked up.
Jesus Christ. I might not even edit this out. Let people be like, oh my God, is Jimmy getting fired? It's your golf clubs.
Nope, my golf clubs have been re-gripped. We're back at it, boys.
Okay, Jiminy Christmas.
Woo, man, I'm not going to lie. I'm sweating right now.
I would be too.
Not good, Matt. All right, so
I think I'll leave that in the podcast, but I will edit it out because the podcast listeners, that, you know, it'd be different for YouTube. I'll edit it out.
What was I saying?
I don't even. You're talking about Daenerys. You're talking about Dream of Spring being all about Daenerys.
Yeah, Winds of Winter. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think Dream of Spring is all about like the final conflict. Danny's there, like the convergence. You know what I mean? Like, what do we do now that all the pieces are on one side of the board? And going from there. So I do think it wins. You'll see the Hodor moment. Yeah.
Okay.
Also, like, kind of fits the, like, the title, like the Winds.
Yeah. So I guess that leads us to the question is, if let's say Hodor does happen in Winds of Winter. Right. Okay. And even if it's at the very end, then.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Because it comes down to Night King stuff, because Night King isn't in the books. So if there is no Night King, does that mean that Euron who is sailing right now with perhaps Dragonbinder. Does he change? Does he see a vision? Does he change course? Does he decide to go north of the wall? I mean, that's.
Well, he could loop around, right? Like, couldn't he go all the way around? Well, we don't know it's west of Westeros. This thing of him sailing, right? Well, he's sailing towards Old Town, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Okay. So, yeah. So, by the way, I am a firm believer we're not going to have a Night King figure. Like, as far as, like, someone named the Night King, I think that is very much a television thing. I imagine Euron will be the ultimate baddie, for sure. Like, he's your penalty, like, he's your ultimate evil. He's your Sauron.
Let's say Euron does get to Old Town.
Okay.
Who do we know? Sam is there, and then we know Illyrius / the Sphinx is the riddle. Does, like, yeah. If he gets to Old Town, does he interact with any of those characters? And that could lead him to want to, like, is there any, like, because what would cause him to potentially go, like, north of the wall? Does he have some sort of crazy vision? Does Bran, like, reach out to him? Like if Euron is ultimately the end character,
right?
I mean, unless we create some kind of Night King leader of the White Walkers or something in the books, which we don't necessarily have, I guess what causes the Hodor moment in the books where you don't have the Night King? Because it's done really well in the show where you have the Night King and Bran sees him and then he touches him in and it perhaps breaks the seal so they can get in there. I mean, that's like, you would have to, what, unless the Hodor moment takes place somewhere else, like they decide to leave the cave.
Well, yeah, they could decide it's time to head back. I mean, there's a lot. I think this is just one of those spots, Matt, where, like, I think it's going to be a lot different than the show. Like, we always talk about, like, what's going to be different. Like, I think it's going to be drastically different. And for the one piece that is, George is going to go into the fantastical. And the nature of the others is completely different in the book, too. Right. So, like, I just think it's going to be vastly different than the show. I think the show did is what they could with the fantastical elements and wanted to get into, you know, who's going to sit the throne. Like, that was their main selling point. And they also dumbed down the White Walkers to be, you know, mindless zombies, essentially, with one figurehead. And I think that the body of them, like, we've talked about their culture, all this stuff's going to have a role to play. Now, one of the weird things, and this has been a theory for a long time, it might've been David Lightbringer who I first heard talk about it, but it was talking about how Euron's banner is a big red eye, like Sauron from Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And there's crows on it, of course.
Which is
very weird. And there's a crown, which, of course, you have him wearing a crown for his people. But I'm also thinking, like, a Night King type figure maybe would be Euron. But Samwell Tarly is in Old Town. And Samwell Tarly is near the Sphinx, who is good at archery. And Sam's banner for House Tarly is an archer.
Yeah.
Euron has one good eye. Is there a chance that Samwell Tarly is the one who puts an arrow through Euron's eye? This was the theory I heard. I'm pretty sure it was David Lightbringer.
Which goes down to, like, The Hobbit, right?
You know, and George does love paying homage. He does.
I think
be cool, dude. It would be really cool.
What's that character's name in The Hobbit? Thorin Oakenshield? No, he's Thorin, not the one who shoots. He's not the one who. Thorin is the dwarf. Who's the guy that shoots the arrow?
Bard the Bowman.
Yeah, is that it?
I think
it's been a long time since I've seen The Hobbit.
Yeah, he uses a black arrow, a special arrow forged by the dwarves.
Right, strikes hits Smaug's.
Yeah,
open thing. What a sick. The movie version is The Hobbit. I didn't particularly like the second two.
Did you see the fan edit that I talked about recently?
Mm-mm.
Dude, there's a free
fan. I loved the first one, by the way. I thought the first Hobbit movie, this might be sacrilege.
It's good.
Man, I think it's right there with the other three movies. The Lord of the Rings movies.
I think
the second two movies, not as much.
I'll give you that. I think the first Hobbit movie's in the ballpark. If it didn't feel foreign, the next ones were not good, but there's a fan edit, and anybody who wants to check it out can go. It's strombolibones.com, and it's called The War of the Five Edits, and it is a mini-series fan edit of the three Hobbit movies into five, like, 50-minute episodes, and it condenses movies two and three to a much tighter and more cohesive narrative. It's so good, dude. It's so good. It keeps so much of the first movie and then really helps out the second and third movies to make them not as awful. Right. And I think it's the best way of experiencing the Hobbit movies now.
Okay. I think it's really good.
I'll have to check it out because I'm down for that.
Yeah, you can watch it at work. You'd love it, dude.
Okay. Okay. All right. Anything else on this before we dive into another Raven?
I mean, there's plenty, but I think that's good. Leave her where she lies there.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to die, real quick, to go back to like Tower of Joy and talk about like what they're saying. Let me pull that theory back up here. Yeah, I mean, the Tower of Joy and like, was she mumbling something differently? It really all comes down to me. And what are we going to see when we see that, like that moment, Tower of Joy? Yeah. Is it going to be similar to the way it was in the show? Is it going to be Bran, who is our visionary? I still would love the idea. And I thought about this. I would love the idea of just like a flashback. Just a flashback. Like a flashback chapter of Rhaegar or something. And I know he says he doesn't necessarily want to add new POVs, but man, I always thought that would be like a
cool it would be within Bran's POV possibly, right? Like you could have Bran have a vision and then it's written in a manner that it's from Rhaegar's third person through Bran. Right. So you could keep yourself.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like the image. Cat of the Canals and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Let's dive into some other Ravens here. So this one is talking about Daenerys. We talked a little bit about, I mean, how her stuff feels so far away. And this person kind of brought up a good point. Like maybe if George, you know, if it's ever finished, you could really combine all the Daenerys stuff into its own, like almost like book series, like a way of doing it, saying Daenerys should be her own book series because it already is. No one in her story travels to or brings news to Westeros, just like no one goes back to the Dunkin' Egg series from A Song of Ice and Fire. Sure, Mormont sends his message to Varys, you know, likely through Illyrio, that tells of Daenerys's pregnancy, and that in turn causes strife between Robert and Ned. But Jorah never made his way to King's Landing. The Unsullied or the Dothraki never arrive. No envoys are sent to Westeros. She doesn't even send ravens back and forth with maesters. Her story is its own island. Yes, it may meet up with Westeros, you know, eventually, but really, if she were to die at any point before, the entire Essos continent would disappear from the story. She's the only thing keeping that world relevant. Arya and Tyrion are there now, but they're not related to her in her story. They could be anywhere in Westeros. They're not part of her story because basically her story should be its own series, a part of Westeros. It released in different books. If it has seemed, you know, as if it seems will happen, she does get to Westeros and then she can merge in the greater series of books. The only reason it wasn't done this way is the name of the series puts her in the same books. The name of the series should be A Separation of Snow and Dragons. A-S-O-S-A-D is a better acronym anyway.
Well, there is somebody in Dunkin' Egg that's in A Song of Ice and Fire. Water Frey.
Blood Raven
as well. So there is some there. And also, I think
Blood Raven's a little bit bigger, but Water Frey is just like a cameo.
Well, there's a possible foreshadowing of how he's going to die in the main series, too.
Right.
But I think that that's not a great comparison considering the fact that Dunkin' Egg is not in the same time period. I see what they're saying. I get it, but
written today, it would be. Cause that seems to be like the whole deal now.
Yeah. I mean,
even that series that Teresa's reading, the Court of ACOTAR or whatever, she's like, well, there's like this book series and there's this one and this one, it's all right, like the world. That seems to be a much more prominent thing today is to write like multiple series that are connected into like a multiverse, you know, which we're seeing and everything.
Well, this also predates even A Song of Ice and Fire, though. If you look at Michael Moorcock has the Eternal Champion series, he has Elric, he has Hawkwood, like he actually has a connected universe back in the 60s, 70s. And then Isaac Asimov connects the Foundation series to the iRobot series as well. So he had a connected universe too. So for me, like, George had that option back then, like he was heavily influenced by Michael Moorcock. So it's like he knew he could do that if he wanted to, and he chose not to. I think that this is like one of those things where like it's certainly not incorrect what this comment is saying, but it's also looking at it through a very specific lens of like separating the stories. But like we know the intention is to bring them together. So like when you're forming like a big epic narrative, sure, like some things might feel separated, but we have to also think about it from like a thematic standpoint and how much we see, right? Me and you always talk about how a Daenerys chapter is followed by like maybe a Jon chapter, and then we can start to look about their similarities, knowing that they will eventually meet and what they've been through,
you know, I guess it's all semantics of how you would want to do it. I don't think the books would be like better to separate it out. Personally, I don't.
I will say, in like the TV show, I think did a great job of balancing all this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because Daenerys never felt as far away on TV. Like it never felt totally different because you're jumping kind of like from here to there and there.
Yeah.
And they were actually able to pace the scenes differently, right? And you can actually have like the Battle of the Blackwater. Well, we see the event happening at one time because you're bouncing back and forth. Here's what's going on with Sansa and Cersei. Here's what's going on with the Hound. One event, as opposed to I read a chapter from this person's point of view, then a chapter from this point's view, then you go back to it. So it's just different mediums. But I think the advantage this series has is that the POV read, where you go back and you do the POV read, is done so well. But we've said it before. It's like, man, some of these Daenerys chapters, they do feel totally disjointed because it's like, look at, we just finished in our reread. I mean, look at how long it took just to do Red Wedding. I mean, it was like,
enormous
block of chapters, and there's like no Daenerys chapter even in there. Right. And so it's just like, man, hers by far do feel the most disjointed because they're so far apart in some of like Storm of Swords, where some of these, it feels very, very far away. But I think it's better paced than a Game of Thrones. And then in Dance of Dragons, totally different because we're more in Esso. So it feels like you can see some of the things that are
going
on. Although, while not directly connected, but I think if/when we ever get wins, and you know, Tyrion meets up with her or some of these other things, then it'll totally change.
Yeah, and you know, we're waiting for the payoff, and whenever it's waiting, you know, it can be frustrating or it can be easy to think about how to restructure things. You know, hindsight's always 20/20, but like when those payoff happen, you know, it's included in the book for a reason, right? Yeah, right. George wants us to think about different things about the story, but also to get us invested in Dany so that when she pops up, like, you know, if they were side novellas and nobody read them and then she just showed up in book 6 and like, hey, there's this dragon queen that has this army, be like, oh, I didn't read those side novellas. What is this? You know, it would feel weird, I think. Also, let's be honest, like, I think Essos is pretty sick in the fact that it makes this world feel so like different and varied from place to place. And it's part of what makes this world like feel so epic is that there's massive, massive distances between our POVs. So, I get it. Like, of course people are free to restructure it however they want, whatever. But like for me personally, I don't think it would make the series better for being removed.
Yeah. Okay. All right. One last Raven here today. So this is from King Frogo Far, Far Away. He says, hey, fellas, love your episodes. I wanted to add to the conversation on identity, which is something we've been talking a lot about, especially in Storm of Swords. Yeah. On my reread, I was really fascinated by the Weirwood doors that George has for the three heads of the Starks. Bran passes through a Weirwood door at the Nightfort. Arya passes through a Weirwood door for the Faceless Men, and Sansa when she's at the edge of the Moon Door. All three Starks go through a symbolic death and transformation through the loss of an old identity to a new one. When Bran passes, he is no longer at the end of the world. He is now in the land of the dead and will no longer be a Stark, but a Greenseer. When Arya passes with the Faceless Men, she is no longer Arya Stark and enters the House of the Dead and become to work for death. Sansa passes and comes back out the Moon Door as Elaine Stone. The door is a literal symbol for death because it is mainly used for execution, and we've seen the symbolism of the moon used to describe the others. It's cool how you all brought in the Dany Flint and Cold Hands for a discussion of identity when the chapter is about the Weirwood door. I also don't think it's a coincidence that Hodor was scared of the door, which, you know, potentially a future scene of that. I enjoy Jimmy's comment of the tear being Bran's, as if he was looking back at his old life/identity. George and his door is my favorite. Dany also has two doors, one being Weirwood and one being the red one, you know, which she will go through. And I don't know how much George added to House of the Dragon, but there is a Weirwood bed that Matt Smith laid on. I love the content, fellas.
Well, thanks for the comment. This is cool, man. This is definitely one of the neater points someone's made, I think, when we were talking about identity. I mean, I go on and on about it and think that's one of the core pieces of the series. But yeah, doors have a lot of symbol, like even in our world, throughout many different cultures and through centuries and millennia. But This is cool. I like this quite a bit. This
yeah, I hadn't really thought about like the actual, the Bran one is so interesting because he passes, I guess you could say they all do really, but Bran passes through a magical door in which it is quite literally from one realm into another. Right.
Yeah.
And we know the connection of Weirwoods and everything. And Bran himself is also somewhat magical, but you know, Arya is, and we don't know about Sansa. Maybe she is as well. I mean, technically you could make, they all have connections with direwolves, which are some sort of magical beings, right? And that they are not normal wolves, to say the least. But yeah, Arya's too, right? Because she goes in and she becomes a faceless man and she begins using magic. And I think Arya is one we kind of like forget about the most when you're dealing with, because Bran and his connection to, actually, if you look at all three of them, right? Mm-hmm. Bran's connection to magic is immediate. By yes. far the most immediate in the story. Sansa's feels cut off because she's not with her direwolf and she's dealing with the politics side of it. And even in the show, we don't really see her do anything, I would guess you would argue, magical, right? That clearly like Arya does when Arya uses faceless men magic. So yeah, kind of interesting, kind of different. Because yeah, she does pass through the weirwood door and then she goes to trains and becomes a faceless man.
All right, there it is, Matt. Someone needs to go through and find every reference to a door. I mean, also, hey, we just talked about hold the door.
Yeah, I brought that up too. Yeah, and weirwood doors. I don't know. Are there any other weirwood doors that we know of specifically? The doors that Dany goes through when she goes into Carth, I don't think it's a weird. Is it weirwood? That's what he says, right?
I think.
Dany also has two weirwood doors. It must be, because then they also have like the black stone that is like, it's like, I believe it's the fused black stone, which is different than like the oily black stone that's on the sea stone chair in Pike. And then of course the red one, which is the, you know, the door that's tied to her past, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's magical.
Yeah. I mean, also how much of its symbolism compared to like literal magic, like that's a balance that we have to try to.
Even in House of the Dragon, though, the Daemon sleeping on the weirwood tree, that totally changes him.
Oh yeah, it's straight up magic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean he's having visions and everything, and then he is, and we don't know how much of that is George. We don't know how much of that's going to be in Fire and Blood Part Two, if we ever, you know, get that. If we, because right now, what's her name? Not Elaine Stone, but Rivers, Alice Rivers. Her story is like unfinished, and we think it's supposed to finish in Fire and Blood Part Two. She's like a woods witch. She's leaving an army. We don't know what, like, we have no idea what's going on with her. No idea. Yeah.
No idea. Also, I guess, you know, we are saying it's straight up magic, but there was also a lot of theories about Alice Rivers drugging Daemon, and that's why he's having visions. So like, there's still a little bit of doubt. Like, is it really magic? Like, right. Is the weirwood really affecting him? So I just love that there's always like a seed of doubt in pretty much everything we assume to be true in the series.
It's totally the same thing with the Boltons. We talk about that all the time.
Yeah.
It's like everyone scoffs at the Roose Bolton is like a vampire theory, but it's like they literally flay people, which is, yeah. And then, you know, they talk about like wearing a skin. We're like, that's totally what Arya does.
It so is. Like,
where's the faces of people?
And then, you know, where does all this magic
that, you know, and that's something too, I don't know that we ever will, because the show didn't go deeper into it. But man, I would love to get more lore and info on the faceless and magic. That's probably it probably will go the same way it does, where she just leaves and, you know, decides she's going to be Arya Stark and goes back. And now she's back in Westeros. So she's going to seek revenge on people. But man, I would love to, if we ever got more lore on the magic of like the faceless men, because we get the dragons,
oh, yeah.
You know, we definitely get, we the, like the tree and the green seers, like we definitely kind of get that. Like, it seems like it's all connected to the children of the forest, but man, the faceless men feel so different.
Yeah. I also think that the doom of Valyria probably ties into the faceless men. Like, that's one of the biggest theories probably about the history of A Song of Ice and Fire. So like anything that we would get about the doom could unlock all of that for us, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Man.
Yeah, interesting. Well, do you still have the doc up, by the way?
I do have the doc up.
Okay, so what up? So did I have on there what episode we're doing next, or is it just
Daenerys 5?
Well, there we go. Hey, we're back into Daenerys chapter next week. So I'll let you hit the outro since you got it pulled up here.
All right. All right. Well, we want to thank you for playing the game. This is the first time I think I've ever actually done the outro. This is great.
Well, we can go back and forth, but yeah, you can do that. You can knock it out of the park here.
I got it, Matt. Watch this. Okay. We want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we'll be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 57, Daenerys 5. And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com. We'll see you next time. And remember, winter is coming.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.